Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Chakra Way Meditation Podcast. Today, I'm really delighted to have on a friend, although we've never actually met in person, even though we live in a similar part of the world. But I have known Rosie for a few years now, and she is a phenomenal woman, and I love her very much. The work that she does is incredible. Our personal connection is that I followed her on socials and been really fascinated by what she did, and then realized that she did business sort of life mindset coaching. And I worked with her for, was it about 3 months or so? And I cannot tell you the difference it made to me. So I will give you the list of all of the things that Rosie does, because she is quite the, is it polymath the right word? I think so. So Rosie is a modern medicine woman, a psychedelic integration coach, coaching psychologist, mindset coach, business coach, life coach, positive psychologist. And I mean, if that's not enough, yes, I think that probably is enough. There's many, many strings to Rosie's bow, and she's incredibly talented. So thank you, Rosie, for joining me today.
Oh, what a wonderful introduction. Don't know if I'll fit out of the room with my head like this now.
Well, I mean, I know the difference you made to me in my life and my business. And so, you know, before we get into the juicy stuff that I want to talk to you about today, I do just want to put it out there that for people who work in my kind of world, you know, slightly esoteric out there, slightly alternative things, your average business coach just isn't going to cut it. You know, you need somebody who's really soul-led and soul-driven and really connects with what you want to do. And Rosie is fantastic at doing that. So if you are a person who, you know, like me, has a little business and just wants to get out there and reach bigger audience and make an impact, then Rosie is certainly your gal. But having said all of that, what I think everybody is interested in, and I'm really interested in, is this first title I gave you, which you give yourself, Modern Medicine Woman. So what does that mean to you, Rosie? And how did you come to be a modern medicine woman?
Yeah. Do you know what? It's been the hardest title for me to actually sit with. So because of my background, I came into the world of inner transformation through quite a scientific avenue. I did my master's in applied positive psychology and coaching psychology. And so as I kind of progressed further into the esoteric side of things, I started to realize that the work that I did was very much aligned to the archetype of the medicine woman, sort of also a bit high priestess vibes.
Yes.
but I didn't want to own that title for fear of it being cultural appropriation, for fear of someone saying, who the hell are you to call yourself a medicine woman? And, you know, it took a lot of people calling me that for me to go, okay, do you know what? I'm actually going to take that title and wear it with pride. But essentially my journey came from weaving in practices that I'd learned through being a yoga teacher. I qualified to teach yoga in India back in 2015 after I'd burnt out as a secondary school teacher and wanted a new direction. And then went on to do the academic studies in positive psychology. And I came through the other side of that feeling like, oh my goodness, we can transform our mind. Isn't that incredible? But then kind of came to realize that which actually happened quite slowly. And although I had all these tools and practices, it took a little while to make any sort of change. And then in 2016, I went to Peru and I drank ayahuasca for the first time. And my goodness, it changed everything incredibly quickly, almost like that. The things that I had been trying to put into practice through the different tools and techniques that I gained from yoga traditions, such as meditations and yoga asana practices, this had given me a different perspective on the world, on my problems, on the way that I was being, on my shadow parts of myself, more than therapy had, more than my yoga practices had, more than anything, in a really short space of time. So much so that actually coming back and living my life by this new set of understandings was quite difficult, really, because so much had changed in such a short space of time. Yeah. And so that's when I first went on to work with someone around integration. So at the same time, alongside this, I was doing my master's and I started to be fascinated by integration. And saw that in the therapy space, in psychedelic therapies, people were already researching this topic. So I started to research it within the coaching space. So for people who are not struggling with a mental health condition like depression, anxiety, PTSD, but people who you'd consider like in scientific terms to be healthy normals, mm-hmm. how can psychedelics actually benefit them? And what could coaching do alongside that? So it's not about kind of trying to resolve some deep trauma. I mean, that might happen within the process. You can't cherry pick what happens on your experience. But, you know, the coaching side of things, I wanted to see, you know, if you apply these coaching techniques to somebody who's just come out of this super malleable transformational state, what happens? And so that journey took me on a real wild ride. I started working on underground ayahuasca and psilocybin mushroom retreats, started to work in some in the Netherlands, and then I also, during COVID, amazingly, was given a job working in an ayahuasca retreat center over in Costa Rica. So I fled the UK as everything was about to lock down and spent my time out there kind of honing my craft as a medicine woman and an integrative integration coach and helping people to, using the kind of tools that I already had in my toolkit, basically make more sense and more change once they've worked with these plant medicines.
Okay. So this is really interesting. So I've always thought, you know, if you were going to do a psilocybin or an ayahuasca, I don't know, what's the right word? Trip? Experience?
Journey. Some people call it journey, yeah.
I hadn't thought about that fact that your state when you come out of it with all this new experience and this new, I don't know what, because I've never done it. You come out with this new experience and this new mindset, but then integrating back into real life is a really big thing. I mean, I think the closest I can come to understanding that is having gone on like a very intense weekend retreat where you don't have time to breathe. You are just in somatic workout. Like, you know, you're either crying or sweating or both at the same time. And you come out of that completely changed, but the time to integrate, the integration period is really profound as you come out of that. I remember this weekend I'm thinking of that I went on, I came out of it and I saw everybody through different eyes, and it was a really difficult, you know, it definitely has, you know, took months to kind of actually let it all settle down. So how does this integration after a journey, how does that differ, or how do you manage it? What are your techniques for doing that?
Absolutely. So I feel like integration is a multifaceted thing. One of the pieces of integration is bridging the gap between who you were when you left to go off and do your experience and who you are now coming back. Because often there's, like you're explaining, the gap in the experience. And so people around you don't necessarily know the new iteration of you. And I often feel like it's akin a little bit to going traveling for a long period of time. And so you might go away traveling for 6 months. And during that time, you have absorbed all of these very different life experiences. Maybe you've, learned new practices, encountered new cultures, new ways of being, new ways of, and the way that you've transformed during that time. And then you might come back to your hometown where everyone else has got on with the same things in the same routine and nothing else has changed. And that can feel really jarring. Now, for people who've done plant medicines, that can happen within the space of a week. So, and then people are expecting you to come back as the same person who left, and you might have had the most transcendental experience of your life and have connected with God. And then you come back and people kind of might be treating you in the exact same way, and you might feel completely different inside. So one of the things I say, your preparation is part of your integration. If you prepare well for an experience, it definitely helps the transition when you come out of it. And so part of it is explaining to the people around you as much as you feel safe to that you're going to have one of these experiences and that things might change for you. Explaining to them about the concepts of neuroplasticity. What will happen is that your brain will allow there to be new transformative networks to happen. So, being able to prepare those around you for it. Some people might go back into workplaces where you can't really explain that that's what you've been up to, and that's okay. And so it's also about then changing your expectations of others to see you as you are, and just knowing that you kind of have to live by these new values in order for someone to relearn this new iteration of you. Now, integration, that's one part of it, but integration is just as much about acting on what you've learned as it is about, bridging that gap. And so, how many of us read a book? Let's say we read this amazing personal development book. And then we don't act on any of the things that we've learned from it. And it almost becomes this like latent knowledge. Like we know it, but we don't know it. And so a psychedelic experience can very much be the same thing, right? It can teach you these incredible things about yourself, about your life, these new perspectives. But if you choose not to act on it, if you choose to then almost like have cognitive dissonance from this newly gained knowledge and to continue with your old pathways, then nothing is going to change. And so that's the thing, is to make sure that when you come back, you start to live in alignment with these new lessons, these new realizations. And the most potent and powerful time to do that is straight off the back of the experience. Because what we found from the brain scans of people working with plant medicines is, I mean, they argue on how big the window is, but around 90 days after the experience, you still have this very increased version of neuroplasticity. Some people say it's as much as 6 months, some people say it's slightly less, but you're looking at around a window of about 3 months where you can have a much greater chance of changing the way that your brain pathways are wired than you would any other time. And it's almost akin to being a very experienced meditator in terms of how it helps you to choose, make different choices, and then consolidate those. But just because you have neuroplasticity doesn't mean you'll make good choices. So if you go back to your life and you make really terrible choices, you're also deepening those neural pathways. So coming back and having someone to support you when you're in that like very vulnerable and kind of soft, gooey, ready, malleable to be shaped kind of position. Like to have someone support you then is probably the most important time during your journey, because you need to make sure that you're acting in alignment with who you want to be and really making the most of that, all that potential that's come up from your ceremony.
I can see that. I can totally understand that. I mean, I've never done any of these trips, so, but So the first thing that I think that a lot of people are going to be asking about, the first thing is going to be, well, hang on a minute. In most places, most countries, ayahuasca, psilocybin, as in magic mushrooms, as they're better known, is illegal, A. And B, you know, we're told all these scary stories about how you can have a bad trip and you can go psychotic, or you can, you know, like you go, if you're having ayahuasca, you will purge and you will throw up and, you know, that it's, I think a lot of people are put off by those kind of scare stories. So I want you to just kind of allay people's fears around that and ask you what, and this is a really basic question, but what are the benefits? I mean, I know you've kind of already alluded to them. It's this neuroplasticity, it's this ability to shift and change in your life. But what are the, like, in real practical terms, like the benefits? First of all, let's just talk about the scary side of it.
Yeah, okay. I think that's really important. And I just want to say that I don't advocate for you doing it in a way that is illegal or harmful in any way. I think that this is the reason I call myself a modern medicine woman now is because it really is about having a sacred relationship with these plants, and that I see them to be teachers, sacred teachers, who need to have the reverence that I think is required. That being said, you know, they're not legal everywhere. That's why I do a lot of my work over in the Netherlands. Like, I also go over to work in places where it is legal, in like the Latin Americas. There are places you can find where it's either legal or decriminalized. And I suggest that finding people practicing in those places gives you the very best opportunity to experience these medicines without any sort of kind of fear coming up about, you know, what the consequences of that might be. And it also means that you can probably talk more readily about your experience because you haven't engaged in an illegal activity, right? So it's much easier to tell a colleague or a family member that you've gone over to a safe established retreat center in the Netherlands where you haven't committed any crime than to say that you've gone to a drug dealer and bought some magic mushrooms and that you're now, you know, taking drugs in your front room by yourself. I think that, you know, that is, people will have a different reaction to your experience based on the setup that you choose. I also think that harm reduction is so important. I have a free preparation course if people want to go on these experiences, because I genuinely think everyone should have access to really good quality information about how to reduce harm. These are not something to undertake lightly. I think that these are incredibly powerful and potent spiritual tools. They're actually mentioned in some Sanskrit yogic texts almost flippantly, that they mention, like, oh, you know, that there is the path that you can go to through meditation, there's the path you can go to this kind of enlightenment through the austerities, and then there is using plants, but that one's very dangerous and just don't bother with it, basically. And so the reason that's in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, just in case you wanted to look that up, and it's referred to as soma is the plant. But the reason that this is seen to be, you know, such a volatile way to get to the state that other paths take you to is because it's like it rocket fuel. It gets you there incredibly quickly, and it allows you to see all of the things in your life. And let's say you've been living a life where you've had some elements of being out of alignment. Maybe you have hidden that from yourself because you're actually not ready to come to terms with the full eventuality of that. An example I can think of is being in a marriage that doesn't serve you, and maybe you have children with a partner who you really in your deepest heart of heart know isn't right for you. And then you are in an experience where you are really sitting with all that's present for you, and you have to come to terms with the fact that actually you're no longer in love with your partner, and actually maybe you don't really like your job, or, you know, maybe you don't enjoy where you're living, or maybe a family, some stuff can come up that is really difficult. And so you have to be prepared for that. If you're going to work with these plants, it is important that you have come to it knowing that it can open a can of worms, and to be really, really at a point in your healing journey where you're ready to deal with whatever comes up, because you feel in a position to be able to do that. I also think that when people have had bad trips, These are often trips that have been poorly planned or poorly facilitated, or often have been in some way misjudged. So when we're looking at harm reduction, we look at your mindset, your setting, and the dosage as three really important variables that is important to look at when you're embarking on one of these journeys. And so the dosage, obviously, if you take too much when you've never had some before, that can be a time that it brings up way more than you're ready to see, or can be really scary because you don't have the tools or the experience to deal with it. The mindset, so I think they work as an amplifier of whatever's going on in your mind. And some people will take them thinking, oh, I'm feeling really sad, it will make me feel happy, but that's not the case. It will accentuate your experience. So if you're feeling really sad, it might send you into the deepest sadness you've ever felt, so that you really feel it. It can be like a magnifying glass on something that you've experienced. And so for some people who struggle to sit with the emotions and really want to do that kind of feeling as healing work, it can be a potent tool. But for some people who've, let's say, I don't know, gone to a party and they've taken LSD hoping that that's going to make them have a good time, but also at that party they don't massively like those friends and they feel a little bit stressed and anxious, well, that's just going to amplify what's really going on for them, and they're going to end up having quite a negative feeling of that experience, and that leads to people saying, you know, I've had a bad trip. So I feel like if you see them as a tool to work through trauma, as a tool to deepen your spiritual practice, as a tool to personal healing, and you do them within a very safe and sacred context, that minimizes the amount of time that you will have things that come up where you're like, I don't think that I can face this in some way. Another reason that I work one-to-one with people is because also when you have these plant medicines in a group, and many, many people do, they go on a retreat and it's a group of people. But if one person starts to process their trauma within that group, that energy is then there in the setting and in the space where somebody's wailing and crying, and that can unearth a load of stuff and bring up stuff for you as well. So for me, I have found that working one-on-one with people when they're working in this kind of psychotherapeutic or psycho-coaching, psycho-spiritual perspective, when they're looking at working on their inner work, you know, doing it actually not in a room full of people, but doing it privately with a support, with a guide, you know, with some music, with complete control over their environment. So instead of being at a festival, it being in a room where you feel safe, where you know, you can put on jumpers if you're not too cold or whatever, you have being able to control the environment, I think, is also really helpful. So there are definitely ways that you can make this a safe and usually quite enjoyable practice. I will just say, also to the purging aspect, that is part of what ayahuasca is. However, you don't feel about it the same way you feel about being sick when you're poorly. And so part of the purge can feel like, if you ever really wanted to yawn and you can't get a yawn out and you're just like desperate to just do that yawn, like you, or like a sneeze, you know, that kind of like feeling like, oh, I just really, really want to sneeze. And then when you do, it's kind of like, oh, it kind of feels like a psycho-spiritual version of that. So you know that there's some stuff, you know, ready to come up, ready to like be purged, to get out of the body, to get out of the mind. And it might be stuff that you've really sat with inside of you for a long, long time. It could be things like traumas or limiting beliefs, or things that are, you know, in some way in your body that are causing you discomfort or problems in your psyche. And so when you have a purge, quite often you can even feel what it is that's coming out. Sometimes it's like almost metaphorical, so it might be that you see black tar coming out or something, or for some people they can really see and connect with the energy of the emotions that are coming up and coming out. And so yes, for some people they're sick, for some people it's a purge of the other end, if you know what I mean. But these experiences are often there, and afterwards you're just like, oh wow, I feel so much lighter. And this is also why many people won't go straight in with ayahuasca. It isn't a kind of light or recreational undertaking. It's definitely incredibly serious work. And you know, the thing with like with mushrooms, I think people can have a much lighter, more enjoyable experience. Like, people can find mushrooms quite giggly, people can find it quite an enjoyable somatic experience, whereas ayahuasca quite usually is a bit harder work for the body, and often it feels a bit more like a deeper healing practice, whereas mushrooms can be almost like teaching realizations. Now, people will have different experiences on both, and I know that I've had my most potent experiences with mushrooms, but then that has been my medicine that I have like worked with the most deeply, and in my shamanic practice have connected with the most as well. So, you know, some people almost see it on a hierarchy where it's like, oh, you know, you've got like really hardcore ones like ayahuasca. And I think physically, yes, it is more difficult and challenging, but I've also had some of the most like potent realizations of my life on mushrooms. So they each have their own energy. And I think part of reducing harm as well is about making sure that you're choosing the right medicine for the experience that you're wanting to undertake.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
It's so fascinating. So the other thing, what I love about plant medicine, this modern medicine, is that these are plants. These are things that are naturally occurring. This is not a pill made in a factory by some dodgy people, whatever. It's there, God-given, as in it is in nature. What is the kind of the history of, I mean, obviously plant medicine was the only medicine that was around for millennia for everybody, but and these are the two that spring to mind, and I suppose marijuana is the other one, which is clearly a plant, although it's been messed around with, tampered and modified a lot to mm-hmm. what I'm sure it was originally when people first started to realize its effects. But what is the history of, I mean, mushrooms, have people been taking mushrooms forever and ever? I mean, do you know much about the history of that?
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of the history is somewhat speculative because we don't have amazing records of it. But as far back as 7,000 BC, we have cave paintings of mushroom-like figures, or people turning into mushrooms, people with mushrooms growing out of their fingers and their hands. And in those times, to paint something on the wall of a cave was usually an indicator that that was quite important to their culture, because it's quite a difficult thing to do. They didn't have paint. So, you know, it was often to show where a good hunting ground was, or that something was sacred. So to see Amanita muscaria, kind of mushrooms and other forms of mushrooms in cave paintings, indicates that perhaps as far back as that there has been a relationship between us and those sacred plants. I know that in Africa there has been a connection with plant medicines. You know, in each part of the world there has been different connections with different medicine plants, which I think is also quite beautiful. So in the Vedas you have a reference to soma, which some people think of as a type of fungus, but we don't know because it's been lost to history. We have in ancient Greece, there was the Eleusinian Mysteries, which was a potent sacrament which was some form of psychedelic compound, which we think might have been ergot, which is what they derived LSD from, which is suspended in an ethanol alcohol type substance. But again, it's the mystery, so we don't know. This is all speculation. But it has been said that many of the like philosophers of ancient Greek, Plato is known to have participated in the illusion mysteries. It was foundational and fundamental in them having the first republic of all time, where people were you know, living without a kind of born into it ruler, which is quite phenomenal. So there is a strong possibility that sacred plant teachers have been a massive part of many cultures for a long time. In the African tribes, they work with ibogaine, the iboga plant, and they call that so because it connects them with their ancestors. They see it as a way to basically connect with the dead and communicate with those who've come before, and so that has been, as long as there's been storytelling about it, it goes very far back. Ayahuasca has been a native indigenous practice of the Latin Americas. So Central and Latin Americas have been working with that plant, which is the ayahuasca vine and the chacruna plant. And they are brewed together to make a tea, in which you have DMT, which is a psychoactive compound, which is in all of our bodies. We have DMT naturally occurring within us, but it also has a DMT inhibitor, which means what would usually be a kind of 5 to 10 minute experience of a very intense trip of just DMT actually becomes a 6 to 8 hour experience. And that's why the ayahuasca journey feels so intense, because it's got those two compounds in. So it's fascinating that hundreds and hundreds of years ago, they learned from the jungle that these two plants together make that fantastic, you know, life-altering concoction. And then here in the British Isles, we have liberty caps, which grow, which are a natural form of magic mushroom. They are the second strongest form of magic mushroom in the entire world that grows, and they contain, for their size, a lot of psilocybin. But because of the fact that our lands were colonized and that they became Christianity kind of really took a hold here, all of our wisdom around the plants and the plant folklore has kind of been lost to people being called witches and burnt at the stake. And it's really sad that our herb lore of the kind of Celts and Druids and people who lived here may have been lost in that way. There's also kind of, I've heard thought about, even when there was witch trials, that perhaps there was some kind of group hallucination that happened from people having rye and grain that had the fungus ergot as part of it. So that may have been why in periods of history, there was kind of periods of particularly deranged behavior.
Dancing fever when we just couldn't stop dancing and stuff.
yeah, exactly. So I mean, we don't know, is the honest answer. We don't know. But if you're interested in this, Graham Hancock does some really interesting speculation. He's a historian who many mainstream historians discredit and don't like, because he speaks about these things. But I think it's definitely interesting.
It is interesting, though, how society has decided and deemed these very natural things to be disgraceful and shameful and not to be done. And I find it really fascinating that we are kind of deprived of and denied of our heritage with these plants. You know, there's so much. I mean, I think recently there's a definite sort of upsurge in knowledge about mushrooms, and not just mushrooms that have psilocybin in, but other mushrooms like, you know, lion's mane and turkey tail and cordyceps and all of these mushrooms that have the most incredible physical and mental benefits for us. again, when taken correctly. And there's a lot of products out there, you know, you can buy teas or pills or whatever, which have these incredible benefits. But that's only really recently that that's started to come out. And I talked a little while ago to a lovely lady who sells CBT things and products as well. And, you know, how this drug that is within marijuana, so therefore it's been outlawed, is actually really beneficial to us. There are so many plant things. And it just goes back to that belief that I have, is like everything we need, you know, you can put it in lots of different ways. Everything that I have, I need, I already have within me. But also as a society, whatever we need health-wise, you know, to support us is here on this
planet has for us, yeah.
Growing. Yeah. And it's such a shame that it's been vilified and made shameful.
Yeah, and I mean, even the process of that, it still makes me a bit angry, because in the 60s there was a big movement towards counterculture, and so these things were not just normal, but they were being like LSD and magic mushrooms were in the 50s and actually late 40s were being heralded as a miracle, absolute miracle substance, and were in trials about just about anything and everything. And so the repression of those came from this counterculture movement, where the people who were taking these substances became actually quite determined that they didn't want to be participants in war. And at the time, America was at war with Vietnam, and the counterculture drop tabs, not bombs, this kind of idea that you should be dropping acid and not wanting there to be a war, meant that the government at the time didn't want people to be taking these substances, because they realized that they couldn't control people who had their mind opened with these potent substances. And, you know, there is, of course, other aspects and other factors that came in with that. But I think a big part of why it was pushed down is because it allowed us to think for ourselves too much. And that still makes me mad that almost, if you really think about it, the idea that you can make a drug illegal, they say it's for our own safety, right? Governments say that's for our own safety, but they don't do that for food, when there's food that's unsafe for us. And they don't really do it for, like, alcohol is incredibly unsafe for us. And so why is it that some things are okay for us to intoxicate ourselves with and other things aren't? And why do they get to choose what that line is? And when you really start to question that and think about it, it's like, actually, you know, why is a government, a group of people who don't actually know me personally, there to tell me what I do with my mind and my body? That's actually quite a bizarre concept when you think about it.
Yeah, it is. And you're absolutely right. You know, I have read about those experiments that were going on in the sort of middle of the last century with LSD, you know, with all of these kind of psychoactive drugs. And they were having really phenomenal success in treating depression and all of these kind of things. And actually, it is now beginning to come back into being scientifically researched in a proper way. But, you know, we've missed out on like 70 years worth of research and potential benefit from understanding how these drugs work, you know. And I know that another side of taking these, especially mushrooms, is microdosing. I think there's a lot of people I know, you know, I have a friend, I know a person who was an addict, and in order to like just come into a normal stasis of way of being, they microdose on, you know, they just pop up, just have a mushroom a day, you know, like tiny little amount, just keeps them going. It just allows them to not fall into this depression. Now, this person has worked this out for themselves and self-medicates, but it's keeping them in a place where they can operate in a normal way. Mm-hmm. Without it, I don't know how they would be. Probably not great. But the benefits of microdosing, is that something that you work with as well, microdosing?
Yeah, so I've had quite a journey with microdosing. I currently don't microdose, but there's almost two approaches. There's a modern Western approach, which is what you're talking about, where you're almost taking it in lieu of taking some form of antidepressant or some other substance like that. So it's just something that you'd take and you enjoy some of the benefits of that. And, you know, there are plenty of people who are saying that it's helpful for treatment of their anxiety or depression or addiction, OCD. Now, I will just say, for some people, taking plant medicines can actually be very difficult if they are in active addiction, just because of the psychotropic nature of them. So if you are an addict and you are in where you in recovery from addictions, I would definitely stay away from trying to fix your problems with another substance, because that can be the nature of addiction. So I just, you know, unless you're like in a clinical trial that's part of that and you are working with people who are doing that really safely for you, I just want to put that out there, because I know that some people can, you know, have an ayahuasca experience or something and actually then fall back into addiction just because they've become addicted to this other way of trying to find the solution outside of themselves.
Yeah.
But yeah, these things
I'm talking about, there is laughter themselves, so perhaps not a great example.
Yeah, and I mean, but the potency for them to be a treatment for something, it does stand. Now, the other approach to it is a more kind of shamanic approach, which is to have what's called a master plant dieta, which is where you will have some austerity in your life. So you might also abstain from caffeine and alcohol, maybe even sex during this period when you're connecting to this plant, so that you can really deeply connect to the energy of this plant teacher, and you can learn everything that it gives you on this kind of small kind of microdose level. So you're connecting with it much more on an energetic plane, and you will maybe journal or have someone who you reflect with alongside that journey, and for that you can then gain spiritual insight. You can use it as a way of increasing your connection with the plant, especially if you're wanting to maybe serve the medicine or deepen your relationship with the medicine in between times that you would work with it more ceremonially. So it depends. There's kind of two approaches to it, and I don't think either one is particularly like better or worse than the other. Within our society, a lot of people talk about microdosing really as that kind of almost therapeutic way. I think there's also this kind of middle way. Obviously, as a positive psychologist, I'm always really fascinated about, but what about the healthy normals? So, you know, when I think about this kind of middle way, is people might be doing it. So the first kind of I ever heard about microdosing was around people in like San Francisco, in like tech companies, microdosing to have that edge against the other people at their kind of big tech firm. So becoming more creative or maybe more productive. And I thought, that is crazy that, you know, these plant medicines are now being used in this like hyper capitalist environment. But those things do still stand. And I guess this actually ends up coming full circle to your benefits question from earlier, that people can experience a boost in creativity, they can increase mindfulness, a feeling of like being really present in their somatic experience, in their mind, in their body, in their breath, without even really having to. It's not like they've had to like practice or, you know, have a meditation practice. It just allows them to be like quite present and focused, which can be really incredible for athletes, because, you know, having that mind-body connection is really powerful. Also, the kind of secondary benefits of mindfulness is that it allows your nervous system to feel very calm and very safe. So that can also be very helpful if you are prone to anxiety. It can increase your viability for mystical experiences. So that tends to be on a higher dosage. Although having said that, you can have, especially if you have a practice of prayer or contemplation, or you already have some sort of spiritual practice, when you combine that with microdosing, that then can also be a very effective way of kind of increasing your connection to whatever your personal kind of perception of the God face is. Can be really good for kind of personal development reasons, allowing you to perhaps see more clearly aspects of yourself that you don't necessarily look at, especially if you combine it with a journaling practice, because then you have two tools at becoming a little bit more self-aware. So you might see that, oh, actually, you know, when you meditate quite a lot, you can have this like second you, the meta you, the you that's watching you, and then you. And so you have the version of you that's kind of doing the thing, and you're going to the fridge and you're getting out the food and blah, 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 blah. Then you've got the meta you who's watching you do it. And usually, you know, in our day-to-day life, we're just doing the things. Mm-hmm. But when you meditate quite a lot, or you have some other practices that allow you to have that self-awareness, this second you becomes a bit louder and becomes, oh, do you really want to eat that? Is that actually going to get you to the goal that you're working towards in your health and your well-being? And so that can be something that happens as well with microdosing, is that the almost becomes more space between your thought and your action, or your meta awareness becomes a little bit more pronounced, and you then are, I feel like this meta awareness is also kind of connected a little with your higher self, so you at your potential. So it's like you have a greater dialogue or influence from you at your kind of fullest potential, which obviously has like incredible impact on just how you live your life on the kind of ground level on the day-to-day basis.
Absolutely, because I mean, if most of us go through our lives and the voice that we hear is the ego, the superego going, you're a pile of poop, or we're not, you know, telling us all the rubbish stuff that we don't want to hear. And we have to work really hard to listen to that higher voice, that higher self, that truth, that real authentic, you know. And that's the work that, you know, when you're working with energy and we're working in any kind of spiritual practice, that's the voice that you're wanting to tap into, because then, you know, when you're listening to that voice, you're living with complete open-hearted, wholehearted authenticity, and that's where you want to be. So having that amplified is what we all, you know, that's what we're aiming for. So yeah, it's a fascinating way to get there. So just to, you touched on this positive psychology, you are a positive psychologist. What is that, just briefly? Because I feel like this feeds into everything that you do, and, you know, with the coaching that you do, plus this plant medicine and guidance and so on. What is positive psychology? I mean, it sounds to be obvious, but I'm not sure.
So basically, up until about the 1990s, all psychology that we had in the West was about how to fix things that were wrong with people. So we had been accumulating an awareness of neuroses and maladies and ways that people were mentally struggling or suffering. And then we're creating ways to basically heal those. And so in about the 1990s, there was a gentleman called Martin Seligman, who's referred to as the father of positive psychology. And he came along and said, hey, what about the healthy normals? What does psychology offer in the fields of people excelling expectations? What does psychology have to offer in terms of understanding what makes people great at what they do? Why aren't we looking at strengths? Why aren't we looking at... And so this became the foundational philosophy or psychology that runs under a lot of occupational psychology, a lot of sports psychology, a lot of these other things, where psychology is basically the foundation of what makes somebody good at something, what makes somebody better, like how can we flourish as humans. And so positive psychology is the psychology of well-being, the psychology of happiness, the psychology of excellence, of high performance, of human flourishing. And so instead of kind of looking at someone's struggling with depression or anxiety, how do we fix that? We go, this person isn't struggling with anything. How can we make them as happy and as well and as successful as an individual as they can possibly be?
I mean, everybody needs that, right? That's that is, yeah. And I now you describe it to me, I recognize that, because that's how you work. That's what your work is you talk to people, you find out what their strengths are, and you go, right, let's go for it. Let's really make the most of all of your strengths. And that's why I love working with you, Rosie, because you are so positive. God, we've taken up a lot of your time already. I want you to now tell people how to get hold of you, where they can find you, what you have to offer, anything, all of that kind of good stuff. And then I'll put links in the show notes for everybody to find you.
I would love for us to connect on Instagram if you want to carry on the chat. And if you have listened to this and you've met me here, if you start to follow me, come and drop me a DM and let me know and let's be friends. I would love
really,
that.
Really, really good on Instagram.
I am Rosie Peacock on Instagram. So I have two websites. I have the website for all of my stuff to do with psychedelics, which is my personal brand, www.rosiepeacock.com. But I've also got a second one where I'm the CEO of Conscious Enterprise, which is where I do all my business coaching, my brand photography. That's my kind of business. Yeah. So that's www.conscious-enterprise.co.uk. And yeah, if you are interested more in the psychedelics work, I have a free preparation course which I'm going to share with Roseanne to share with you guys. And should you want to take that a step further and you would like a one-to-one retreat, I am currently booking a very limited number of one-to-one retreats over in the Netherlands, so get in touch if that floats your boat.
Yes. Well, it is really exciting. Everything that you've got going on is fantastic. And thank you. You've shared so much. I mean, I know that I could talk to you for hours, but I feel like there's only so much one can take in at a time. You've given us things to understand. And I think it's such a valuable understanding to have, because I think it's really easy to have, to make a snap judgment about plant medicine and go, oh, it's drugs, and therefore I just say no, I don't like drugs. And actually there's so much more to it. There's so much to bear to gain. Mother Nature, Mother Earth has given us many gifts, and for we to reject them and say they're bad.
Aho, I feel you on that one. Thank you so much for having me, Roseanne, and thank you listeners for staying with us up until the end. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.